Elias, I've asked you to join me here this morning in conversation because last night was a shocking and profoundly disturbing moment for the American Jewish community. And your family, your son, was at the epicenter of it. And so I want to just ask you to share what happened last night with Mikey on the Columbia campus as he tried to celebrate his Seder.
Thank you, Rabbi, for letting me be a cameo appearance on your sermons. So everybody understands, my son is finishing his first year at what it's called the joint program. It's between the Jewish Theological Seminar and Columbia University. So he's taking, he will get a double major, one JTS, one at Columbia. His dorm is at the JTS campus, which is on 122nd and Broadway. And he's been very active in the Hillel at Columbia, Columbia Barnard, which is on 115. And so this entire week, Mikey knew that he didn't have classes at JTS, but he would have classes at Columbia, thinking that the classes will be in person. So he says, "Dad, Mom, I don't want to go home because I don't want to miss the classes. So I'm going to stay here." And we ask him, "Mikey, what are you doing for the Seders?" And he says, "The first night I'm going to be at Hillel. The second night I'm going to be at Chabad. They have better food." But anyways, that's for another discussion. Mikey in our house grew up with all these stories that I would tell him about antisemitism in Argentina, things that I grew up with and things that I have to go through. And so he was aware of the other parts, but I always end the conversation, any of these times that we would have a conversation with him is, "You don't have to worry, you're in America, things don't happen here." And so now the reality is a little different. Last night, it has been a difficult week for him, not so much him, he doesn't wear a kippah when he's walking home, or he goes to the dorm, he's not waving an Israeli flag. He tries to be, you know, a regular student who happens to be Jewish, going to Jewish places and going to the classes. So he never suffered any physical, you know, he wasn't in danger. But he was shocked by the things he heard. He walks, you know, in the middle of campus and he heard, you know, things like, "Let's bomb Tel Aviv and let's kill all the Jews and Hamas, we love Hamas," and things like that. So he has been in shock. So he said to us, "Mom and Dad, I'm going to go to Hillel." And so we spoke to him yesterday about six times. And we asked him, "Mikey, don't go alone. We don't want you to walk all these, you know, seven blocks alone. Go with two or three friends." And that's what he did. But last night we were at the Seder and we were with the phones. You know, there were any other soccer matches that I could check, so I have to check on my son, how is he doing? But we were not really, you know, at peace and relaxed until he got home. How did he get home? That's the funny things that eventually he will be telling his grandchildren. An NYPD cruiser drove him from Hillel on 115 to JTS on 122nd. So Hillel had arranged with the NYPD that they will be protecting the kids who wanna get out at, you know, 11 p.m. and go to their dorm. So Mikey got in the car with three other kids and the driver said, "Where do you want me to take you?" And that's it.
So from Argentina to the Goldene Medina in America, where your children will never experience anti-Semitism, to having to be escorted in a police cruiser from a Pesach Seder just back to your home.
Crazy.
So Elias, how do you celebrate a Pesach Seder? I mean, you're all about singing. Your Seders are incredible. I'm really looking forward to the second Seder tonight with you. It's full of joy, full of song. How do you do Seder under these circumstances?
Well, I think as a good Jew, I'm going to respond by asking you a question. Because, you know, growing up in Argentina, I said this many times, you develop a thick skin. You develop a thick skin about things that can happen to you at any point. So for me, this it's shocking, but it's not new. You know what I mean? It's different because it's in America and the way it is, but it's not new different from where I grew up. And so for Mikey and David and my kids and you know, all the kids who grew up here, that must be shocking. And for you, I'm sure, and for like any other person who grew up here in America and lived in relatively calm and freedom and you know, with proudly, you know, expressing who you are. So can I ask you, can I reverse the question?
How do I do Seder under these circumstances? I hear the voice of my father clanging around in my ear and have to say, oi, he was right the whole time, right? He every year when we would come to Vehisha Amda in the Haggadah, and he would say, in every generation they rise up against us. And I would say, oh, no, not in every generation. Focus on the last part of the blessing here. It says, V'hakadosh baruch hu matzi leinu miadam. You can follow it along here. It says, God saved us from that kind of a world. And that's the message that every Pesach Seder until last night had in it, in my home, that yes, we have seen. If you have the Hartman Haggadah, there's a whole long list of various times in history when the Jewish people have faced horrific anti-Semitism and also near devastation, and we survived it all. And so my focus has always been on we survived it all. Last night, that took on an extra tinge, an extra tension of hope. We survived it all. If I look back to my history, maybe I can see that there's a future, even when it seems so frightening. All right, so now answer the original question. What about for you?
Well, we had the blessing of having family last night for the first time. So my wife's sister is Argentinian. Her husband is Argentinian. They have three boys. They don't live in Argentina, they live in Mexico, so they all came to be with us. So we had this unusual, fabulous Spanish Seder, Spanish-Hebrew Seder, which was delightful, but also keeping an eye on the phone all the time until Mikey would write, I go to the door. So it's this mixed emotions and mixed, you know, experiences.
So how did you relate to the prayers of the Haggadah? Specifically, you and I have spoken about this prayer, Vehisha Amda, and every generation they rise up against us. And there's this weird thing as a cantor that you have picked out before, that it is a very somber and sober message, and yet the tune is not at all. Can you share with us one of the traditional melodies that one might sing, Vehisha Amda? If you guys know it, you can sing along and let's meditate on
it. Why don't you start? I want to test your knowledge. Vehishe amda, vehishe amda, lavavotenu velanu. Vehishe amda, vehishe amda, avotenu velanu. Shelo echad milvad, amar aleinu lechalotenu. Ela shebechol dor barot. עומדים עלינו לכלותינו, והקדוש ברוך הוא מצילנו מהאדם.
All right, so cantor, that feels very joyful. What do I make of that? What can I learn from that?
I would say this is my own interpretation. The melody, this specific melody, doesn't sound like a sad melody at all. It's not like a poignant melody. It's not like something that you would reflect or you would see some kind of sadness expressed in this melody at all. It's a melody that perhaps could have been written more to appeal to younger audiences, to keep the kids engaged until food is coming.
Keep moving forward.
Right. And so it's not a melody that goes along that well with the text.
Well, exactly. It's got some tonal dissonance there. And I feel like in the entire Haggadah, there is a sense of tonal dissonance. There are many times throughout our Haggadah where we get stories which are pretty sober and even scary from the Jewish people, and yet we sort of give them this beautiful melody that gets us along and helps us to experience joy in the moment. And of course, there's the joy of the liberation, but there's an insistence throughout the Haggadah that we have not yet been redeemed. You brought up the idea of Halach Ma'anya, that we also sing, "This is the bread of affliction, yay!" there.
Right.
Right? So what do you think we're supposed to make of this, and in terms of our own experience facing the terrors of our world today? Is there...
So can we stay a little longer in Vayishamda?
Please.
So tonight we are doing, as you know, because you are singing as well. I don't know if you know that.
I am.
Okay. So we are doing a different melody for Vayishamda that written by Yonatan Razel, an Israeli composer. That to me, it's much more, you know, in connection with the text of what's going tonight. So let's do it a little bit.
Vayishamda
Laboteinu, Vayishamda Laboteinu Belohanu, Shelo Echad Bilvad Omed Aleinu Lechaloteinu. Omed aleinu lechaloteinu. Ve'akadosh Baruch Hu matzileinu, matzileinu mi'adam. And so on. So this is much more in tune, and we change the word amad, which is in past tense, to omed, which is in present tense.
And what does that shift do for us today? What do you think that says?
Well, for it looks like, at least in the last decades, this was the past. Now is the present.
And now is the present. And we drive home this idea that we really are facing today and in every generation those who hate us. And that would be a pretty hard way to end your Seder. Right? I mean, nobody wants to leave your Seder table and walk back into a world where there's nothing that you have to bring. And so I guess I have a question about, where can we find resilience? Where can we find hope within our Seder, given the reality of our world? And if you turn the page, Rabbi Brad Hirschfield actually brought up, I think, a really powerful point that is critical for us as we face a world where our children are jumping into the back of police cruisers just to get home from their seders. He points out that the sages distinguish between two Passover celebrations. The first one, called Pesach Mitzrayim, the Passover of Egypt, and every other Passover celebration after that one is known as Pesach Dorot, the Passover of subsequent generations. While many distinctions can be made between the two, he says, none strike me as more powerful or more needed, especially since October 7th, and even more since this past, he was writing this before, when 300 missiles and killer drones were launched on Israel by Iran, than this one. Pesach Mitzrayim, that original Passover, was celebrated while we were still enslaved. And if you think about the idea of our Haggadah coming to us with a story of people who celebrated their path to redemption, not only after they were redeemed, but even before the redemption occurred, what might we glean from that? What do you think we might glean from that? He says that one of the things that we glean is that, you know, Moses and Aaron were not fools. They knew the world around them, and they had been promises, and those promises had been broken. They live in the real world. And yet, Pesach Mitzrayim invites us to continue to hold true to our values, to our core, even when we're faced with hatred, even when we're faced with hardship in our real lived lives. We don't shut our eyes to it. It exists. We face a world that is not good right now for Jews in America, not in most places in the world. And yet, that's not the end of our story. And into that, I wanted to bring an oddity of the Passover Seder, which we rarely focus on, but and in fact, most years up until now, I in my family would skip this, the Shvoch Hamatcha al Hagoyim, pour out your wrath unto the nations. And it felt like a little bit of an icky kind of a text to say, pour out your fury on the nations that do not know you, upon the kingdom that doesn't evoke your name. They've devoured Jacob and desolated his home. And one of my teachers in Jerusalem actually pointed out that this is, again, a tonal dissonance in the Seder. We jump from this kind of frustration, and we have Eliyahu Hanavi. It's at the moment that we're opening the door and we're singing Eliyahu Hanavi, and we're talking about peace, and we're talking about love, and we're talking about joy. So I want to ask you, Elias, in context of what Mikey's experienced, what does Shvoch Hamatcha say to you this year? Pour out your wrath.
Yeah, and also Rabbi Michelle Robinson. also, you pointed very quickly the Alach Maniyah. It has a beautiful line that I always, to me, that was my favorite one. All those who are hungry, let them enter and eat. All who are in need, let them enter and celebrate the Passover. So we are not saying, you know, only Jewish people, you know, anybody who is hungry, please come.
Beautiful.
Please come, celebrate with us.
Yes, and my rabbi, when I was in Jerusalem, Rabbi Richie Lewis, taught that actually there's a direct connection between this moment and that one, between the anger that we use when we call out in frustration to pour out your wrath, right as we bring in Elijah, and the verse that you said, which is at the beginning of our Seder. At the beginning, we say, let all who are hungry come and eat, let all who are needy come and partake. And if you are opening the door of your home, which point would you do it? Before your Passover Seder was concluded and you were like ending up, you know, getting ready to go to the dishes? Or would you do it at the beginning when you say, let all who are hungry come and eat, let all who are needy come and partake? By show of hands, which one would you prefer? The first, opening it up at the beginning? Yeah, or opening it up all the way at the end when you're done? Yeah, not too many people are ready to welcome new guests as they're moving on towards the end of their Seder. That's time for us to be leaving, not time for us to be coming. So why do we open up the door there? Richie Lewis said that actually, given the horrific anti-Semitism that was faced by Jews throughout our history, including blood libels, where people might come, anyone might come and share your Passover Seder experience. And of course, Jews were accused of horrible things, including using the blood of Christian babies in their matzah. And he would say people would smuggle in objects and things that would then result in the families getting taken by authorities and continuing as sort of proof for the blood libel. And because Jews were afraid, they couldn't open their door then. They had to wait until they completed their Seder in order to welcome people in. And so our fear shut us down from being able to do the thing that we as Jews are meant to do, which is open our homes, open our hearts, continue to bring good into this world, and continue to build and plant the story and share the story of redemption and hope. And Rabbi Lewis pointed out that this is, at least in his mind, an explanation for why we say Shvoch Hamatcha there, because how frustrating and how upsetting is it that fear stops us, that hatred stops us from being our best selves. And yet we don't stop there. We open, we continue to do our Seders, we continue to open our door For Elijah, we continue to plant the idea that tomorrow can be better today. We know, like Pesach Dorot, that it's not necessarily here yet. But we understand that if we continue to do us, and we do it with authenticity, and we do it with blessing, and we don't let the hatred make us smaller, then maybe we can continue to be a story that our grandchildren are saying, hey, Bubby, Zadie, how come you had to sing that back then? And so I want to end just by asking you if, as you think about Mikey and his story, and you think about this Shvuch HaMatcha moment, bringing Eliyahu in, what would you wish, what would you pray for him and for all of our college students on campuses all over America?
Can we bring Rabbi Wes into this?
phone a friend.
Right. My prayer is, you know, that hopefully things will come down, that he would be able, as any other kids in the world, Jewish kids, express their Judaism in a free way, not to be concerned about who they are, and that there will be a better future, and also resilience. We are here. We are not going anywhere.
Resilience. Pesach Dorot gives us that sense that although we have not yet seen it fulfilled, it can come. And so let's end. Eliyahu Hanavi.
Eliyahu Hanavi, Eliyahu Hatishmi, Eliyahu, Eliyahu, Eliyahu Akiladi, Vimera. Mashiach ben David, Mashiach ben David.
We rise.